Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show, one as once again I'm looking forward to. One of the things that I love about our show is that it's about getting knowledge out to people that they don't usually get from the typical sources. And as a physician, I'm seeing our healthcare system really become quite devastated with what's going on. And the patient-doctor relationship, as we all know, has been affected. But I think patient care is also being affected. And I'm seeing evidence-based medicine. It's always about some pharmaceutical. But I wanted to distill the show down to old school and looking at medicine as it used to be, because a lot of things that have happened have been superimposed. But as I say always, I think the body is self-healing if you get out of the way. And one of the things the show today is going to do is going to educate people about how they can start that process. So today I wanted to welcome my guest. We're going to speak with Ms. Paola Brown, and she is a speaker and author. She earned her BA in English education and an MA in curriculum and instruction from Arizona State University. She graduated summa cum laude before spending more than a decade teaching English at the high school and college levels. She's now the president and founder of Americans for Homeopathy Choice, and she advocates for the growing number of moms and other homeopathy users who want to protect their right to choose homeopathy. Her latest project, Teach Me Health and Homeopathy, helps families ditch big pharma, realize true health, and thrive. She's fluent in Portuguese and Spanish, and she's also a health instructor for Care for Life, a nonprofit organization working to develop sustainable communities in Mozambique. And you can find her work at paolabrown.com and also learn more about her advocacy. So, Ms. Brown, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because I think our conversation is timely and it's something that not enough people know about. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here and excited to talk to your listeners.
Well, let's start off from the beginning. You have a very interesting bio, and you know, you start with teaching English. How did you segue into homeopathy? Is this a personal thing that turned you onto it, or is it something that you've always been interested in?
Well, I actually was an immigrant from Brazil and was raised, my dad was going to school. So I was raised without health insurance and without access to quote unquote great conventional medical care, unquote, right? And my mother, when we immigrated, she brought with her a homeopathy kit from Brazil because she was like, okay, very practical mom. She was like, okay, we're not going to have health insurance. I'm going to just have to kind of try and figure things out on my own. And so I actually, you know, it seems like it would be a negative thing to not have access to insurance and doctors and whatnot. And of course, for catastrophic serious things, that is not good. But I actually ended up not visiting doctors and not taking medications my entire childhood. I was very healthy and I loved language and taught high school. I loved teaching high school. I loved teaching college. I loved teaching. It was really, really fun. But at some point after my dad graduated university and got a real job, got real health insurance, I realized, oh my goodness, you know, I started getting all these UTIs. And the UTIs were typically honeymoon cystitis. It was after I got married. I started really getting these UTIs. And that's when I started taking antibiotics. And at the time I thought like, oh, it's not too bad to be taking these drugs because they're not long-term drugs. They were just short-term, like, you know, for the infection. But of course, we now know what we know about the microbiome and the gut biome. And sure enough, I just got very, very sick and I developed multiple autoimmune diseases. And so it was really just out of necessity that I began to explore health because I developed celiac disease. I developed this horrible skin condition called dermographia that was like dumping a bucket of fire ants all over my body. And it was every day, all the time. It never let up. And then another one that I had was interstitial cystitis. That was my first one. And it was a very painful chronic bladder pain condition, not an infection, but it felt like an infection. It felt like one of those awful, I describe it as light your bladder on fire, turn it inside out and put it out with a track shoe. That's what it felt like to have interstitial cystitis. And I had that for 7 years. So I went from being this very healthy little Brazilian immigrant to being a very sick American dream girl. And isn't that funny how, you know, when I entered the American dream, when my mom felt like she had achieved the American dream, which to her in part was health insurance and a job and a college degree, she threw out her kit, her homeopathy kit. Because she's like, we don't need to rely on these pedestrian things anymore. And that's when the American, you know, conventional mindset really entered my life. But, it's not only in the U.S. In Brazil, it's a very heavily pharmaceutical company. So it's really global. And so then I went to all these amazing doctors. I went to the Mayo Clinic and I was seeking options. And I just couldn't believe, going back to what you said in your intro, I could not believe what they were offering me. One of them was, okay, we can give you this blue pill. It might make all your hair fall out. And I was like, okay, that sounds horrible. Like that's the side effect. But they're like, but it usually doesn't make much hair fall out. And I was like, yeah, Brazilians don't lose their hair. Okay. So I was like, hard pass on that, you know. And then I went to another doctor who said I could have this device that you kind of insert it like a tampon and you electrocute yourself and it tires out the nerves and then you don't feel your bladder for the most of the day. And I was like,
horrible.
Yes. And I said, they clearly offered me the best drug, the one that was the blue pill. And so basically, I just kept going to all these different doctors all over the country, trying to find like a better option, like a more reasonable approach. And that's when I was like, okay, these guys are not trying to cure me. These guys and gals are not trying to cure me. That's not the objective. They all say there's no cure for this. That's the first thing they tell you. And I thought, well, why don't I just at least spend time with the people that hope and believe that my body can heal? Even if they don't know how. Like, let me just spend time with them. I've done many years with these other guys that aren't even trying. Maybe that's the first step that was wrong, you know? So ended up ultimately doing a lot of different things, but none of them really fully cured me until homeopathic medicines did. I had this flashback like, oh yeah, I took these as a little girl and I remembered those little pellets that you put under your tongue. And sure enough, it took about a year of treatment, but, you know, clearly right from the get-go, I was having improvement, which was very unique from all the other treatments I tried. And then just to kind of conclude that whole journey, about 12 years after I was first offered that blue pill, it was called Elmeron, was a drug. My mom calls me, Paula, have you heard of this drug, Elmeron? And I said, yeah, it's the one that was going to make my hair fall out that I turned down all those years ago. My mom said, look at this. They're having class action lawsuits because people who take it for about 15 years are going blind. And I found that out 12 years after I was offered it. So I just remember like that was like a lightning strike for me. Like, oh my gosh, I could have been sicker than I was then, blind. And I began to ask myself, what was it about how I was raised that protected me from following that path that so many of, you know, I refer to the people who have interstitial cystitis, my sisters, because it's a very female-driven disease. And I'm like, these sisters of mine that have suffered with the same disease for years and now are blind on top of that, like what was different about my past that protected me that where I said, no, I don't want to take this drug. And that's where I, you know, crossed over from teaching English to teaching families about true health. Because today you don't stumble into health, you stumble into disease unless you know what to look for and how to keep yourself safe. So,
well, that was eloquently stated, and I want to definitely explore that further when we come back. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking about our health. And one of the things that struck me about what you said is you achieved the American dream and you got sick. And that's one of our hallmarks, it seems. We're having people on more and more medication, but they're getting sicker and sicker, and they're starting at younger and younger ages. And I think you're absolutely right about our healthcare system. It's about management and it's about chronic care. And if they can give you more than one pill daily for the rest of your life, I think the health industry would be thrilled with that. But what people don't know, and I think you speak out again eloquently to it, is how the medical education system changed. You know, it wasn't always evidence-based. It wasn't always about big pharma. Wasn't it initially started by a homeopath?
Yes, actually, that's a very interesting thing. That the United States history, health history, is really fascinating. So the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act is this law that was passed in 1936, I forget for a second. And it was passed by a man named Senator Royal Copeland. He was a really cool guy. So Senator Royal Copeland was the health commissioner for New York during the flu of 1918, that horrible pandemic that killed almost one in every three adults. And he actually was very successful. Actually, when the pandemic, the 2020 pandemic hit, the New York Times and a couple of other prominent newspapers did some articles on him and compared his pandemic and him being health commissioner and his success, because his areas were largely did much better compared to other parts of the country because of how he organized everything and how he handled it. And interestingly, so this helped him rise to prominence in politics and ultimately became a New York senator. Well, interestingly, he was a homeopath. And so when he passed the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, he included homeopathic medicines as legally drugs. And this might be helpful for your listeners to know, homeopathy is not like a blanket term for home remedies. A lot of people think it is. It's actually a very specific paradigm within natural medicine. So just like you can't confuse acupuncture with herbs or herbs with acupuncture, homeopathy is its own system of medicine. And the United States had a golden era where 50% of the medical schools, 50% of the hospitals, 50% of the practitioners were all homeopaths. And, you know, there's the whole story of the Flexner Report with, you know, and how the pharmaceutical industry really took hold in our country. Really, it was just very lucrative. Homeopathy is not lucrative. I mean, think about it. I'm cured. I don't take those medicines anymore, the homeopathic medicines that cured me. I'm better. And so it's not a lucrative business. You're going to be kind of a poor doctor your whole life if you're going to cure people, right? And so it was that beginning of homeopathy that we have in our American history and how it came to be legally a drug in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act so it can treat conditions.
Well, when you think about that and the power of homeopathy and homeopathic medicine, how did we get back to that? I mean, I want to go back to the golden age. As a physician, I took an oath to help my patients, not to just manage them. And I know that patients should lead the charge on this because, you know, we don't exist without our patients. But is there, do you think, a new renaissance where patients become a lot more savvy on taking control of their health instead of just wanting it to be, you know, you have to work at things, right? So I want to be better. I'm going to do my, you thank goodness, found the you know, the chutzpah to take care of your health. You weren't happy. So you decided to take another path. How do we get patients, parents, to withdraw their consent from this? I don't think people are really happy taking bunches of meds every day, but do they not know that there's an alternative?
Well, you know, I think partially, yes. I think they don't know there's an alternative, but I love that word chutzpah because, you know, it's like people need to learn to think. We have been taught to the point of not questioning. As a society, this is happening in schools. I was a school teacher. I taught college. The educational system right now is teaching everyone just to the point where they're not going to learn to ask questions. But we actually need to learn how to think as a society and ask questions. Let me tell you a story. When I was in that doctor's office, that very first time when I was first diagnosed with interstitial cystitis, this very painful bladder disease, my doctor offered me that drug. And I was like, what are the side effects? She said, it's going to make your hair fall out. So she gives me all these options. And oh, and then she says, you can join a support group if you do the opioids for the addiction you're going to. And I was like, what? No. And so I looked at her and I was just like, I'm very kind of frank. I was like, I put my hand on the table and I was like, listen, I can't do any of these options. This is crazy. Like, with all due respect, like, this is crazy. She put her hand on the table next to mine. And then she said, I wouldn't do it either. Go out there and find yourself a cure. You're doing it the right way. She said that to me. Years later, I had an epiphany, like, how screwed up is that? That I had this, I mean, God bless her for being frank and honest with me. But how screwed up is it for me to go to a doctor's office and for her to lay out a bunch of treatments that she would never do, that she thought was ultimately wrong? There was something about, go ahead.
That's a problem, in my opinion.
Yes.
How do you divorce? It's not even hypocrisy. It's worse than that, because you're supposed to be an advocate for your patient. And if you're not willing to do it, then there's no way you should be, you know, mentioning that or advocating for it. It's just wrong, in my opinion.
Well, and partially it's probably because she was like, well, I've got to give her something, you know, and I don't have the answer for this. So she's going to give me the options that I think that she thinks, you know, at least are available. But also, like, is she afraid to kind of open up and say, look, there's not a lot of good options here, but I can't really say that to you because if I do, I'll get sued. Like, I don't know. We live in a very litigious society. I don't know what kind of pressure. She's got a family to feed and, you know, a life to live. And so, but when you look at all of the pressure she was having at not being able to be totally frank and open with me, all the problems I had in, like, that I developed over time after this first meeting, I began to really lose trust. And I began to realize, like, what is happening here? We are living this weird charade of the emperor's clothes. You know that fable where the charlatan comes into town and convinces the king that only smart people can see the clothes? Before you know it, everybody's, you know, the king's running around naked, and it takes a child to laugh at him to break the spell that, you know, that everybody thought, well, everybody else can see this, only I can't. We're living in this weird medical version of that story where everybody's running around taking these pills, taking these drugs, hoping, thinking it's going to help them. And it takes almost like an act of innocence. I was very young when this happened. I only had two kids. I was like 24 years old. I was, you know, a baby. It takes kind of that act of innocence of like, I'm sorry, this seems crazy, I can't do this, to kind of snap yourself out of it and say, no, I'm not going to do this. And I think that's the first step, is just like learning to think and being real with yourself and asking yourself, where does this idea, okay, drugs, opioid addiction, support group, where is that actually going to take me? Who am I going to be at the end of that story? Mm-hmm. And you just need to say no. You know,
that's a really good question. I mean, it's almost, you have to love yourself and you have to decide how you envision your life. And it's definitely, from what she told you, that's not a way to live, where you're in a support group away from your family, not be able to feel empathy. Once you're addicted to something, that becomes your center. Forget everything else.
Right.
And just the fact that was a possibility, just gives me pause. It's just chilling, actually, that this goes on every day in the healthcare system. But, you know, maybe if she had said, I don't know, but we can look, let's go and search for it together. That different energy towards the, we don't know everything. And I don't have a problem with saying, I don't know, but I'm going to look it up and find out. Maybe if we can just get off of the hubris train for a minute, just because you're a doctor or healthcare professional doesn't mean you know everything. There's too much to know. So that relationship between your patient and you, and a patient who's savvy and a patient who wants to be a partner in their care, that should be, you know, to me, the new standard of healthcare. Not everything fits everybody, but at least we should give everybody the chance to see if they can find the path that's not drug driven, if they so choose. She tried almost to take away your choice, it seems. And to me, that's one of the things that, if nothing else, we have to have choice in everything we do, in every aspect of our life. And we only have our health, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We really only have our health. And I, something you said too, it's not only that I believed in better for myself or loved myself enough. It's like, because I grew up so healthy, Dr. George, I saw myself as a healthy person. I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm healthy. My body is a little behind, but me, I'm healthy. So we just need to help my body catch up. And that was kind of like, I mean, I ran half marathons, I ran triathlons. Like, I was a busy, healthy gal. And I was just like, no, you don't understand. My body just doesn't get it, but I am healthy. That's kind of how I felt. Like there was this miscommunication with my soul and my body. And I knew that I wanted to get there. And I think, you know, to every, what is that, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right?
Reaction. Mm-hmm.
So we live in this world that the action is like all these drugs, all this disease. Well, there is an equal and opposite reaction to that. And it's the internet. We've got a lot more information at our fingertips. We can find practitioners. We can find natural health practitioners. We can join support groups. We can go onto forums. And we have a lot of opportunity at our fingertips that you know, women who develop this condition, you know, I mean, obviously it's more prominent now because everything is more prominent now. But, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago that might have had it, they used to say it was all in their head. They would say, no, there's no infection, that these symptoms are just in your mind. They would deny that these women didn't even have these symptoms. So, you know, I'm thankful that we have at least resources at our fingertips. And honestly, like leading into homeopathy is the people's medicine. It is safe. It's very usable for acute things, for a mom or a person at home. And then for the deeper chronic stuff, you can work with a practitioner, and it really is like the perfect, most beautiful medicine that can do a lot of good for us.
Well, I know we're going to take a break in about a minute, but I also, when we come back, I want to really go into, you know, how we can you create your own homeopathic treatment plans. And I know that you've written a book, Intro to Homeopathy, and people can find that on your website, paulabrown.com. And I think if we can be, we have to be our own doctors almost at this point. At least you can feel comfortable getting yourself out there. Obviously, I don't think there's room for everybody in this healthcare system, but you have to be the leader in it instead of having somebody tell you. You can't live that way anymore. People, you don't know if they have your best interest at heart, they don't know you most of the time, and you don't want to be a statistic. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Paula Brown. And before the break, I was mentioning her website. It's content rich, and people need to go to paulabrown.com, and that's P-A-O-L-A Brown without an E.com. And on your website, you have a lot of information, your book and curricula that you've written for children. And I wanted to drop back into the creating your homeopathic remedies. It seems intimidating, but it seems like you've kind of helped people walk through that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting about homeopathy, it's very non-toxic. It's very safe. Now, typically, like, especially in herbs, you can make your own remedies and learn how to wildcraft them. And I guess technically in homeopathy, if like the apocalypse hits, you could make your own homeopathic medicines. But in general, in the United States, because it is a drug, it is controlled, the manufacturing is controlled by the FDA. So you would buy it from a pharmacy. There's really great homeopathic manufacturers like Boron, BOIRONUSA.com. I actually sell a homeopathy kit on my website from a cool company called Alois. And that's just, if you go to my website, paulabrown.com/, I call it the Evie kit. So /Evie, E-V-I-E kit. That's a great place to get remedies. So typically you buy them, but they are super affordable. They're like $8 to $10 for a vial, and they just all have wonderful abilities to do a lot of different things. And so you don't have to worry too much about making the remedies, although like in my intro to homeopathy class, I explain how they're made, but they're basically highly diluted medicines that are non-toxic, and they stimulate a healing response in your body.
Now, one of the principles is like, is it using like to heal like? What does that mean for those who don't understand?
Yeah. Okay. So it's something that we're kind of familiar with when it comes to like allergies. We've seen like, okay, if you're allergic to something, you can take minute doses of it, and that'll help, like honey, right? They say take local honey because the honey might have some of these things that you're allergic to, and it helps kind of build that immunity. So homeopathy takes that concept to the next level. So the example that I like to give, and everyone likes to give, is the example of an onion. So an onion is something that, let's say you're in your kitchen and you're chopping it up, and it's going to produce symptoms in you if you chop up an onion, it's particularly if you're in a small unventilated space, right? So if I were to chop an onion, I'm going to develop egg white runny nose, not like green runny nose, egg white runny nose. And we're very, very meticulous with our symptoms in homeopathy. So egg white runny nose, watery eyes, sometimes your eyes will burn and itch. And in homeopathy, we also pay attention to what makes the symptoms better or worse. We call those modalities. So if I stay in that small room, I'm going to feel worse. But if I open a window or step outside, I'm going to feel better. So that's kind of the constellation of symptoms associated to the crude form of an onion, right? The actual onion. So if you think about illnesses which mimic this, you might have like seasonal allergies, not all seasonal allergies, but some seasonal allergies may present like that, or certain colds, like a particular viral strain of a cold might produce those symptoms. So in homeopathy, what you do is you take the homeopathic form of an onion, which is a highly diluted onion, and you take it and it stimulates your body to heal itself. Now, this is where critics of homeopathy like to step in and say this doesn't make sense. Because when we say highly diluted, we say it's so diluted that you have like little nanoparticles of onion, you know, in the remedy. Or sometimes it's not even there. They just see kind of an imprint into the water, the dilution. They'll see an imprint under thermal microscopes, we'll see an imprint of an onion there. And so that's where a lot of people say, well, how does this work? Like, you're not even taking onion at all, because we're kind of used to thinking of medicine in forms of like macro, like, you know, you need to take an herb, you need to take an antibiotic, like there's compounds, there's stuff in there that forces your body to do stuff. Well, what's cool about homeopathy is that it actually is a much more refined approach. So our bodies respond to tiny things, a virus, like small things have a big impact on us. And we've seen tiny things have an impact in our world, like microwaves can boil water. Like, we know that these tiny things have an impact. So it's like your body is, let's say you have those allergies that mimic an onion. So you're sick, let's say you're sick at home, you're sitting on your couch and you're sneezing and you've got your watery eyes and your runny nose. It's like your immune system is saying to you, Dr. George, we are so sorry. We are trying our best to get rid of these allergies, but we just don't know how to do it, but we're working on it. Just, I'm so sorry. And you're just miserable. Then you take the remedy onion and you put that under your tongue. And now your body goes, wait a second, guys, stop what you're doing. We're getting attacked by an onion. And your body begins to mount an attack because it thinks an onion is invading it. So your body mounts an attack to deal with that. But you're not being attacked by an onion. It's just this minute dose. And then what does your body end up curing? But the allergies or the cold. So my son, you know, because we teach homeopathy to the kids and the family, my son was like, mom, it's like the homeopathic remedy is a hologram and your body sees this invade, like a false disease. And then it goes to fight off that false disease, but there's no illness. You're not sick with onion. And it ends up triggering a healing response for the actual illness. Like cures like. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, it's that the power of water, for example, it has a memory, right?
Yes.
So it's all energy based. If you infuse it or speak into it, you're creating this energy field, and we are energy beings. So either you harmonize it or it's disruptive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, water is really a cool theme we could talk about for hours. But yes, and so yeah, it is diluted in water. They do use a little alcohol to keep the water from, you know, becoming contaminated, because pure water can get dirty. And then typically what they do is they pour the medicine, the dilution, onto a pellet, you know, sugar pellet. Sometimes they're beet sugar, sometimes they're lactose sugar. And then that's coated on the outside. So by the time you buy your remedy, little bottle, it looks like a little chapstick tube, and you'll shake it and you'll hear the pellets inside. And so most companies have a way of, like, you turn the lid facing the ground and you twist that lid and a pellet will drop into the lid. And because the medicine's coated on the outside, they say don't touch the pellet, just kind of drop it under your tongue because you don't want to rub the medicine off. But I've touched them before and it still works great. But so you put that under your tongue. So it's not actual liquid that you're taking typically, although sometimes it is, but typically it's little pellets and you pop that under your tongue. And so the trick in homeopathy is to look at the symptoms of the illness and to match those symptoms to the right remedy to bring about to stimulate a cure. Now, here's the thing: for an acute illness like a cold, I mean, we have tons and tons of illnesses that we've taken care of. Flus. I mean, pneumonia. Once my daughter had pneumonia. Once my son, like an idiot, lit a firework and was holding it and explode. It popped out of his hand, but his hand was severely burned. We were able to take care of that. Just so many instances where, like, my husband got stung by a bee. It actually turned into cellulitis. We were able to treat that. These are serious infections. I cut my hand once on farm equipment. I had a red line going down the palm of my hand towards my, past my wrist. We were able to fix that with homeopathy. So all of these acute things, short-term illnesses, we were able to do ourselves with homeopathy. But now the chronic stuff, like interstitial cystitis or autoimmune disease or allergies, those are the kinds of things you're going to want to work with a homeopath, because they're going to have to look through your timeline throughout your life, because these illnesses span years. You know, a cut on the hand spans a few days. So it's easy to get the totality of those symptoms and to find like heals like. But for a chronic thing, you're going to want to work with a homeopath, because that's going to span a much larger period of time, and they're going to have to sift through all those symptoms and select a matching, a correlating remedy.
I mean, it just seems like it's so, it can be used in a, for lack of a better way to put it, a plastic form. It is not a one size fits all type right. of, you know, modality. And that's what makes it really powerful to me. We're very rigid in the regular Western healthcare system. If the person has a symptom, you have one course of treatment. You don't think outside the box. It's never individualized anymore. And I right. think that's where we fall into a real hole. Because if it doesn't fit, then you're on another medicine and you're just mixing and matching. And it's just a mess. And honestly, it's demoralizing not to be able to have somebody come into your office and have them leave feeling better. And thank God I don't have to say that, because I have a wonderful practice of wonderful patients, but an average physician, I don't think, feels that way anymore. And
right.
Is there any, just, I know we're going to take a break again in about a couple of minutes, but I'm curious, do you see a growth of, you know, classically trained physicians opening up their mind and starting to think outside the box because they feel so limited in what they can do to help their patients?
Yeah, absolutely. I see it. And I just want to point out that system where you know, you have one disease and one treatment plan that serves the pharmaceutical industry, because they can make one giant batch of one drug, an antipyretic, and everybody uses it for their fever. So that system benefits the pharmaceutical industry. The individualized system benefits nobody but the individual, because now you have, like in homeopathy, like they're struggling because the pharmacies have to make a lot of remedies in small batches, which is very expensive to make a lot of batches of just, you know, 1,000 batches of just a bunch of different medicines and then different potencies. That's very burdensome on the pharmacy. It's burdensome on the industry, but it benefits the patients. But they're not selling large amounts of one thing. They're selling a little bit of everything, right? And so, mm-hmm. And so what was your question though? I forgot.
Well, I mean, are you seeing doctors turning more toward homeopathic treatments?
Absolutely. I think more and more doctors are becoming naturopathic physicians because that education is more in harmony with them. And in naturopathy school, they do get a rotation of homeopathy most of the time. And then a lot of those homeopaths are choosing to focus just on homeopathy and make that the center of their practice. So absolutely, it's growing so much.
Well, that's really good to hear. Because before it seemed it was very adversarial and the people were protecting their turf and it's anything outside the box was poo-pooed and demonized. And I think was at some point, if not still, a concerted effort to remove it as a choice. And that's a problem. But again, patients have the most power here. You get to vote with your pocketbook. I think this last few years have taught me a lot about the power of the purse and the power of the patient. And if you stop going to these places that treat you like cattle or put you on something and then not even ask you what other medicines you're on, stop going there, because they will stop doing it if they don't have patience. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. welcome back to Living the Solution. I think we're having a really important conversation with Ms. Paola Brown. And, you know, Ms. Brown, I really love the fact that you are such an advocate for moms and for patients. And I admire your work, because what do you teach somebody? And you're teaching children too. You know, the okey-doke doesn't work. When you have knowledge, you have a real frame of reference and nobody can just put stuff over on you. And that's when you become a thinking person. And down the road, it's a skill, isn't it? And once you have that skill, you can expand.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you have to have that skill. So my program, you know, talking about teaching kids, the first things all kids and really every adult needs to learn is to read the drug label, is to read the side effects, right? If you read the drug label carefully, you're going to start realizing like, maybe I don't want to subject my body to these. And side effects really aren't side effects. They're just really unintended effects. They're effects a drug will do on you. They're just hopefully not the ones you're going to get. But it's like, it's almost like we think of like side effects as like a side little course, you know? No, it's part of the main course. Just hopefully you won't get a lot of those or any of them. And you're subjecting your body to that risk, and hopefully your body can find a way to overcome, because it's always trying to protect you, but you're putting it through a lot of stress. And I think that, you know, that's the first step, is that kids need to learn how to do that. The second thing they need to learn to do, and families, entire families need to do, is learn how to ask questions. I don't want people to necessarily be combative with their doctors, but I do think like when they prescribe something, questions like, what are the long-term studies on this drug? How, you know, my drug had not been out for very long. If I had known to ask that question, how long have you had this drug out? The one that makes my hair fall out. She might've said, I don't know at the time, but like, oh, a few years. And that's a big red flag. You don't take new drugs. You don't do that. That's a big red flag. So just learning to ask these really good questions. I remember once I had a miscarriage. It was a very sad thing, but I had hemorrhage. I was only about 12 weeks along, but I hemorrhaged. And so I had to go to the hospital. So very thankful for the emergency care. I got 2 units of blood and everything. But then this doctor comes in and she's like, put her on antibiotics and put her on this and put her on that. And I was like, wait a second. Why am I going on antibiotics? Where's the infection? And she says, well, you know, I see signs of it. I'm like, okay, well, tell me the signs. Because by now I'm a homeopathy mom, I'm a momeopath. And I'm thinking like, if there's smoke, there's fire. But if there's no smoke, there's no fire. Why are you giving me this drug? You know, and you know, uterine infections like this are serious. And I do think in life-saving heroic circumstances, you should take antibiotics. And I was willing to do that, but I wanted to see the smoke. Because we don't know why I had a miscarriage. Could have been an infection, but what was it? And she said, and I was like, so what are the signs? And she was like, well, there are signs. And she wasn't saying them. And I was like, okay, well, was my white blood cell count high? I don't think it was elevated. She's like, well, you've had 2 units of blood. And that made me mad, Dr. George, because I was like, wait a second. You and I both know that you have to check my blood before you give me blood. And so you and I both know that white blood cell count was before I got blood. So I don't even understand. Like, that made no sense to me. But you see kind of this, you have to be a little bit smart and know stuff. And I was like, do you smell an odor? And she said, yes, I smell an odor. I'm like, great. Can you describe it? Because I smell blood, but you know, we're talking like an infectious odor. And she's like, it's hard to describe. And I was like, well, let me give you some adjectives: fishy, cadaverous, putrid, like rotting flesh. Do you smell anything like that? And you know, I'm sounding like I'm combative right now, but at the time I'm just like, do you smell these? And she's like, no, not those, not. And then she was like, it was very tender when I checked you. And I was like, yeah, but I had a miscarriage. My cervix is gonna be tender. Like that doesn't point to an infection. And finally, I was just like, listen, I'm so sorry, but you have not convinced me that I have an active infection and I do not feel comfortable taking these antibiotics. I'm going to wait for my OBGYN to come in because this is the ER, you know, on call. GYN. And then this woman looks at me. She's like, don't call me down for her again. I hope mortality rate for these infections are very bad. Good luck. And she spun her heel and left, and I burst into tears. So now I lost my baby and I've hemorrhaged. I've had a long night and now I'm going to die. You know, and I burst into tears. And then a few hours later, my GYN comes, who's amazing. I actually was with midwives, but she was the on-call doctor that I had the opportunity to meet. Paola, don't cry. Your white blood cell count was normal. There's no smell. It's like she had overheard the conversation, but she hadn't. There's no smell, honey. I don't see any sign of infection. Yeah, but my cervix is tender. She's like, but you had a miscarriage. Of course it's going to be tender. You can't go poking around down there. It's going to hurt. And I was like, really? She's like, honey, I really don't think you need antibiotics.
What a difference. I mean,
what a difference. And that's what's so beautiful about homeopathy is that this medicine will not work unless you have symptoms that guide you to the right remedy. It's like that other doctor, she was not tied to reality. She was tied to rote medicine, routine, and this is what we do. But homeopathy forces that your homeopath or you as a mom to stay fully committed to reality. What are your symptoms? And then you learn the keynotes to remedies and you begin to match the person's symptoms to the keynotes of the remedies. Because if you don't do a good match, nothing will happen. It won't help. It will not act. Your body will be like, eh, whatever.
That's so really fascinating.
Yeah, I love that about homeopathy because you can't drift. You have to stay fully tied with empirical evidence and you're watching. And that is scientific. That is true medicine.
I couldn't agree more. I think you just hit the nail on the head, but you have to be present and you have to be engaged with patient, with the symptoms. The system that we're in now, it's so fast. There's so little time. There's just get them in, get the next one, write the prescription. And at this point, I'm not even sure that doctors see the patients because it's extender staff ahead of them. And the doctor's just signing a chart or finishing the chart at the end of the day. But again, you had the presence of mind to know your body better than anybody else. And I think if nothing else, if people interact with a healthcare professional who poo-poos them, who doesn't listen to them, you need to move on. That's your first sign right there. Don't stay in that system to be abused, because that's abusive in my opinion. You got to move on.
Right. Yeah. And I think, like, unfortunately, this was my fifth pregnancy. I have three children. And my last two were miscarriages, but you know, this is my fifth pregnancy and, you know, second miscarriage where I had that voice. But I promise you, Dr. George, if that had been my first pregnancy, there's no way I would have had that voice to speak up. And so, you know, I remember even being embarrassed on that occasion that they wrote difficult patient on my chart. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be on my chart now. But you know, now I'm like, it's a badge of honor. It's not a badge of honor just to be difficult, but when you're right and you're protecting your health and you're forcing everybody to listen to you. Yeah. It's a good thing to be a difficult patient, whether it's for you or for your kids. And I like what you said too, about like, basically what homeopathy forces us to do is to connect with ourselves. Like it forces the practitioner, whether it's a doctor or a traditional homeopath, it forces them to really listen and connect deeper and deeper and deeper. And like, I joke, like my mother thinks she knows me really well, right? Cause she's my mom. But let me tell you, my homeopath knows stuff my mother has no idea, because she just really had to get to know me and learn my symptoms and learn, you know, for my deeper chronic stuff. And it just forces you to connect. If not, you can't get from this medicine what you need. And the conventional model is teaching us to accept a disconnect. And it's not just that. What does conventional medicine tell us to do? You have a headache, you anesthetize it. You are sad. You broke up with your boyfriend, you anesthetize it. Your kid has a fever, you push that away. It constantly teaches us to kill, burn, and anesthetize all of these things away. When actually homeopathy sees symptoms as gifts and opportunities that lead us to the right remedy, that lead us to the cure. It's a
different frame.
Yeah.
That's totally a different frame of reference, isn't it?
Yep.
Wow. That's subtle, but extremely powerful. By the time you suppress the symptoms, you've missed your opportunity. You maybe your golden window to stop the problem from propagating. Exactly. Imagine how many people are ending up really ill, like a chronic disease, when they could have stopped it because they listened to the person or they took a different path instead of just giving you an anti-inflammatory, doing something that's going to stop inflammation. It's coming from somewhere, right?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I'll have moms from church or whatever call me like, hey, I hear you do natural stuff. My daughter has a fever. Is there something I can give her for it? And like, that right there, they're like, that's enough information. What should I give her? And I'll be like, okay, well, I actually need to know a lot more about the symptoms. So can I call you? Like, this isn't a text message. Can I call you? So I'll call them and I'll be like, okay, so let's start with how high is the fever? Like, let's learn about the quality of this fever. Oh, you know, I don't know. I just gave her some Tylenol or some ibuprofen or whatever. And I'll be like, yeah, I can't help you. You need to wait for that to wear off and then call me because you've deleted my roadmap. That's the only way that I could have found, you know, selected a good remedy for your kiddo's fever. And that fever is doing something for you. There's a really great book. I'm sure you know about it. It's called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor by Dr. Robert Mendelsohn. And he goes through like, I think 12 or something like that, facts on fevers. And it was just my Bible when I was first starting because I felt utterly alone. I felt even afraid to, I mean, okay, listen to like the irony, right? So I read this book. I'm like, fevers are good. Let your kids' fevers burn. And I order my first homeopathy kit. It comes in the mail. This is about when I'm about like 24, 25, you know, right after I had been diagnosed with things and I was waking up. And sure enough, it arrives in the mail and my middle child, who was about 6 years old at the time, maybe he was five, he comes down with a fever of 105 Fahrenheit. And it's just like Murphy's Law. Like, of course, like right when I commit to not do this, you know. And sure enough, like he has this high fever and I'm reading my books and I'm giving him a homeopathic remedy that's great for high fevers. It's called Belladonna. And he just slept and he burned this fever off. And I remember being afraid, like, I can't tell my doctor that I'm not giving him an antipyretic. I mean, the kid is like 14 years old now, but at the time I was like, I can't tell her this. I have to hide. Like, nobody can know that I'm letting him stay hydrated. And he was sleeping and he was comfortable and he was fine. He was sick. And of course, he's the kid that I had given the most antibiotics to. He was the kid that I'd given the most pokes to, you know, the thing that starts with the V. He was a kid that I had done tons of things and the doctors thought he was developing Crohn's disease. The doctors thought he was developing severe food intolerances. He was my sickest kid. And I believe, now there's no way to prove this, but I believe that this was his body's way of trying to purge all of this damage that I'd done to him. And he got multiple 105 fevers throughout that season in his life over the next 2 or 3 years, maybe like twice a year. And it would always be 105, 105, and I would just let it burn. And it's like every time he got over those, he was a little less sick with his chronic stuff.
That's amazing. I mean, the body is just so incredible. You know, time goes away too quickly, and I really would love to have you back so we can speak more on, you know, things that you've learned. I mean, you have a wealth of knowledge. I think parents really need to be educated. So I just want to make sure people know how to get to your website, buy your book. And also, I think you have a podcast as well, right?
I actually don't have a podcast. I keep trying to start one, but I don't yet. But I do have, you know, a program to teach your whole family. I have a program especially for moms. It's a book club program. I have that intro to homeopathy class. I have something for everyone. And yeah, my name is Brazilian. So it's like Paula, but the U's and O. So PAOLABrown.com. And actually, if you go to /free, you'll get to a bunch of free samples of everything that I have. So,
Ms. Brown, thank you so much for joining me again. I'd love to have you back. This is just like to whet everybody's appetite and like a beginning primer. I just want to thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.